The bottom of the hour has come and gone. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the sporting news, we are pleased to welcome back to the program Jim Cerny. Jim, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you, boys?
Doing very well, Jim. How about yourself?
Excellent. Thank you.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Jim, obviously, we brought you on. We're going to look around the NHL, but a team you're very familiar with throughout your career is that of the New York Rangers. They're off to a tremendously poor start this season. Only one victory in their first eight games, 1-5-2 in their first eight. Can you pinpoint what ails the New York Rangers, and do you think this is something they're going to be able to play their way out of, or is it getting really close to crunch time in New York very early on this season?
Yeah, it's funny you mention, is it getting close to crunch time? I think they're shutting down all the bridges in and around the tri-state area, because Ranger fans are, it seems every game, they're running to the bridges ready to take the plunge, because, you know, they're so concerned about their team, and for rightfully so. You know, I think they're good enough that they'll pull out of this. You know, but at some point, you look at the schedule and you're almost 10 games into the schedule. You're almost an eighth of the way through the season. And, you know, there's time to be concerned, because, you know, it's such a tough division. The Metropolitan is so, so good. And now it's an even tougher division when you have the Devils and Carolina, you know, as improving teams within that division. But, you know, answering your second question first, I think they're good enough to pull out of it. I think they have the personnel to certainly compete for a wild card playoff berth. I didn't think going into the season that they'd be one of the top couple teams in the division, but I did think that they'd be a seventh or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. You know, that said, you know, to go into your first question, pinpoint the issues. Well, they were things that, you know, should have and were a concern heading into the season. You know, who's going to replace Derek Stepan? All right, granted, he was their number one center, but is he really a true NHL number one center? No, probably not. But who's going to fill those minutes? He played every important minute for the Rangers down the middle. Penalty kill, power play, even strength, played a very important role defensively, as well as being the top line center. Well, Mika Zibanejad certainly has picked up, you know, the offensive side of things. But, you know, who's handling that defensive, you know, coverage against the other team's top line? You know, who's getting those top penalty-killing minutes now? They have not effectively replaced Derek Stepan, in my opinion. And you know, that's a big issue. It's not the only issue, but it's a big issue, because what it does, it causes down the middle a trickle-down effect. You can argue that Mika Zibanejad is a better number one center. But Zibanejad was a really good number two center on this team, and Kevin Hayes was a really good number three. Well, now Hayes moves up to number two, and even though he's coming off a good game against the Islanders, he's really struggled against going against top six forwards as opposed to usually bottom six forwards. And then, you know, who's your third-line center? David Desharnais? Yes, off to a good start, a surprising start, but he can't be the long-term answer. Really, he should be your fourth-line center. And so now the fourth line becomes a hodgepodge. In some games, Alain Vigneault is, you know, going with seven defensemen and 11 forwards, because he really doesn't have, you know, enough solid NHL players to play on the fourth line. I'd argue the third line, because he's moved Desharnais up from fourth to third. So, you know, that's a major issue there. And then the other is, you know, they've really struggled finding the right defense partners. And part of that is because Kevin Shattenkirk, I like that they signed him a four-year deal, not a seven-year deal during the summer. But he's never been a number one center. He is what he is, defenseman. He's what he is. He's always been, you know, more of a second pair guy. And You know, he lasted two or three games with Ryan McDonagh on that top pairing, and now they're like, ooh, maybe we don't want to give him 25 minutes a night. And now they're scrambling, trying to figure that out. And, you know, their propensity to fall behind early, give up goals early. I mean, I think I pinpointed in a long-winded way, you know, three major issues that, they need to figure out here in order to turn things around.
Now, Jim, sticking out east and with the Montreal Canadiens, another team that's struggling, they lost again last night, 6-2 to the Anaheim Ducks. They've now only won one game in eight games. How do you lose 6-2 when you have 30 shots in one period and you're facing an injury-depleted Ducks team?
Hey, it really is. It's almost beyond belief. You know, in the past, and this is something that, you know, the Rangers faced last year when Henrik Lundqvist went through his issues, is, you know, in the past, Montreal was struggling for any stretch in games or you know, in a game or in stretch of games. At the end of the day, they had Carey Price, you know, backstopping things and kind of settling things down and giving them a chance. And not to put this all in Carey Price, because I think Montreal's issues are far, far bigger. But, you know, he has struggled out of the gate here. And he hasn't given them that, you know, elite-level goaltending that might buy them some time and may steal them some wins in the early going. And they rely on him so, so much. And without that safety net, you know, their other issues are just being exposed. You know, they just don't score enough. They just, you know, they'll get the shots. But, you know, where are those shots coming from? You know, are they grade A chances, really? Or are there more shots just coming, piling up from the outside? And when they do have the grade A's, you know, who's finishing? You know, Max Pacioretty's really struggled to start the season. In fact, a very telling quote the other day, he said, you know, you can't pin this, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't pin this on other people. You know, I can't be pointing fingers, or I can't really be raising my voice in the room, because it starts with me. You know, I'm struggling mightily. I'm expected to score 30, 35 goals, and look at the start I'm off to. And then, you know, their other issues, you know, defensively. I mean, they're just a mess right now, to be honest. And, you know, Carl Alsner has struggled. He was the big offseason signing. You know, there are a lot of issues there. But for me, and it's almost unfair to put this on Carey's shoulders, but, you know, he's bailed them out so often and been that safety net for them so often. He needs to be that guy for this team to kind of regain their confidence and their swagger and to settle things down there.
Jim, another player you're probably very familiar with, Dan Girardi, entering his 12th NHL season, but his first with his new team, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay's off to a phenomenal start, and I know you just wrote about Dan Girardi and what the impact Coach Cooper is seeing from the defenseman. So what do you think about Dan Girardi's transition, and how has he been embraced in Tampa?
Yeah, I talked to Dan the other day, and, you know, he's really enjoyed the move. And he joked, he said, you know, I don't miss the hysteria about being in New York and having, you know, people, like I joked before, you know, go into the bridges because they're 1-5-2 to start. He said, you know, he doesn't miss that at all. Here, he's fit in really well in Tampa. As I wrote in the story, John Cooper spoke as much about what Dan does in the dressing room and working with a kid like Mikhail Sergachev and some of the other younger Lightning players, and the example that he sets, and, you know, how he talks to them. He's a very vocal guy inside the room. He talks as much about that as what he's done on the ice. In a bigger picture, I really thought Tampa, you know, was going to bounce back this year. If they stay healthy, you know, that's a dynamic offensive team. The question will be, and it's, you know, Dan Girardi's spot there at the defense core, you know, are they going to play well enough defensively to make a deep run come playoff time? Because to me, I think they're going to win that division. I think they're going to win that division fairly easily. I think it's, you know, them in Toronto, you know, are going to run away with that division. You know, but the question becomes, come playoff time, will they be able to shut other teams down? And that's going to be the big question. I think you can, you know, run and gun a lot during the regular season, but come playoff time, you got to play better defense. And that defense, even with the great Victor Hedman there, does worry me a little bit.
Jim, earlier this week, Los Angeles Kings forward Jeff Carter had a scary incident, and now it looks like he's going to be out for the next couple of months. L.A. is arguably one of the most surprising teams so far this season. Do you think they make a move, or do you think they try to get by in the meantime with what they've got?
You know, you would think they'd have to make a move. You know, those are pretty big skates to fill right there, you know, both from an on-ice point of view and, you know, a leadership point of view of you know, a veteran leader in that room. You know, that's a tough guy to lose. You know, I know that now Brooks Lyke is, you know, had been hanging around after his PTO. He signed, you know, but Brooks Lyke at this stage, you know, of his career is, and really throughout his career, has been more of a bottom six guy. He's not Jeff Carter. I think that they're going to try and ride this out for a little while and see if they can get the answers internally. And then, to their credit, they've had a bunch of surprises already, you know, in that lineup so far this season. But, you know, that's a big blow. You know, I would think, you know, over the course of time here that it's going to catch up to them and that they would have to make a move. Again, easier said than done, because that's a position that, you know, we just talked about the Rangers at the beginning. Boy, the Rangers would love to get a center, too, you know, not because of injury, just because they don't have the depth there. So, you know, it's a very competitive spot, you know, that other teams are looking to fill as well. But at first, they're going to go internal. There's no question, you know, from a financial point of view and giving opportunity within the organization, that's what they're going to try and do first. But, you know, again, not to repeat myself, but those are big skates to fill. So, it's going to be hard to do, I think, from within the organization.
Jim, we'll let you go on this last question. In Buffalo last night, playing on home ice, they lost to the Vancouver Canucks 4-2. 1-5-2 on the season for the Sabres. They went through a Western road trip, and that certainly didn't work out well for them. What's the problem in Buffalo? We know that the coaching staff and the front office has been overhauled this offseason. Are you surprised with just how slow the Sabres' start to the season has been?
Yeah. I thought that they would, you know, come out of the gates a little bit better. You know, Jack Eichel's happy. He gets his contract extension. You know, there's a new coach there. You know, an icon in Buffalo in Phil Housley. There's a new management group. You know, it just had this fresh feel heading into, heading into training camp. And, you know, obviously it just hasn't translated. I mean, they've been a mess on the ice. What is it now? They've given up 6 shorthanded goals already this year. I mean, that's unheard of. There are teams that will go all season and not allow 6 shorthanded goals. You know, to me, that's not only lack of execution. You know, that's really being a mess,
yeah.
You know, out on the ice. I mean, there are things that are going on that just cannot happen, you know, and, you know, this goes back several years, but, you know, putting your chips on Robin Leonard to be your number one goalie may have been, you know, now in hindsight, you know, the wrong decision as well. And, you know, they're not getting the consistent scoring up front. I mean, there's so many areas that they're a mess in right now. And, you know, even, you know, Eichel scored a, you know, a gorgeous goal last night. It just hasn't been enough, you know, and they need more from Reinhardt. And, I mean, really, up and down that lineup, you can pinpoint the issues. But I, you know, going to your original question, yeah, I am surprised. I thought, you know, I didn't expect them to be a playoff team. I expected things to be much better to start this season, and you know, I am very surprised. And it's a shame because you see so many great surprises in the league this year. You know, the Devils are a big surprise. That the Kings are off to a surprising start. And, of course, the Golden Knights. You know, so you see that it can be done. And I thought the Sabres, if not off to those kind of great starts, at least would be, you know, more competitive in the early going here. And, you know, this could go south very quickly for them because – there are a lot of players there, and that's an organization full of those players that have been accustomed to losing. Like, they're used to being at the bottom of the standings. And you don't want these guys to fall into that again. And a bad start, you know, with a team that's, you know, really hasn't had success in recent years, you know, that it could bury them early.
Jim Cerny covers the NHL for Sporting News. Jim, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, you got it, boys. Have a great day.
You too, Jim. When we come back, the injury bug has struck around the NHL. We get you caught up on all those teams who are dealing with it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly before 11 in the morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. When the puck drops, Bernstein's Deli is the place to be. They got all the big screens, full volume, great food and drink specials, including some of Ezzy's favorite pickle chips, which is why he's now, what did I call you, old pickle chip Skinsburg? Exactly.
So yeah, pickle chips.
Yeah, old pickle chip Skinsburg.
No, pickle chips, not pickle chicks.
Pickle chips, that's what I said.
Oh, sounded like you said pickle chicks.
No, pickle chicks doesn't make any sense. Old Pickle Chips Ginsburg is what your new nickname is there. Bernstein's Deli, check him out, of course, bernsteinsdeli.com. And if you're looking for a place to maybe have your holiday party with the holiday season upcoming, check it out, Bernstein's Deli. They can hook you up with that as well.
You know, I was there at Bernstein's Deli yesterday with my better half, Naomi.
Yes, far better half.
And we were
really
eating.
There's no comparison, really.
No, yeah. And we were eating lunch. No. With Jason,
ah.
And he did something interesting. He actually had a cabbage borscht bowl of soup with a matzo ball inside of it.
Whoa.
Yep. He combined two soups.
So he combined like the Ukrainian borscht with the Jewish matzo ball?
Yep.
I mean, that's the black and white cookie of Seinfeld.
Yeah, it was really intriguing to me.
In a soup form.
Yeah, looked delicious.
Yeah. No,
I had the icy sandwich because that's what I eat every time I go there.
Yes, naturally. And explains why you're wearing sweatpants at the moment. But, you know, that's all good.
No, Drew, I'm wearing sweatpants because I like to party.
Let's talk about some injuries from around the NHL. You mentioned Jeff Carter's injury with the Los Angeles Kings. That's the big one. That's going to keep him out of the lineup for 6 to 8 weeks with a lacerated left ankle tendon. Can the Kings, who've sort of been a bit of a surprise thus far this season, can they withstand that injury? The Kings aren't a team that is known for their goal scoring, and Carter is their best goal scorer.
Yeah, can they withstand the Carter injury? I mean, Jeff Carter, you're talking about an Olympian. You're talking about a gold medal winner at the Olympics. I mean, he is a top-flight NHL center. He's obviously got two Stanley Cup rings to prove it. I don't know, Drew. I mean, the Kings' identity, speaking of identity, is their defensive play. I mean, Jonathan Quick is having a great year. We know that that defense is rock-solid, led by Drew Doughty.
Mm-hmm.
Andrei Kopitar's had a great start to the season, as has Dustin Brown, who's had a couple of down years, maybe even three down years, if you want to go back to the year after they won their last Stanley Cup. So when you're talking about, you know, can they withstand Jeff Carter's injury, well, they can't replace Jeff Carter. And, you know, Mike Camilleri's been a healthy scratch there. He actually scored a goal last game. So, you know, Mike Camilleri will score, you know, for them to kind of alleviate the loss of Jeff Carter there. But you can't replace him, as I just said. So, I mean, can they get by without him? I don't have the answer to that. I mean, all I can say is you don't replace a guy like that in the lineup unless they make a trade here. And, you know, we've talked about that before, and we're going to talk about it next segment. You know, there have been some rumors that the Kings might move a defenseman, whether that's Jake Muzzin or Alec Martinez. I don't think they want to do that, especially when you're talking about Muzzin. He's having a great start to the season as well. So I think they're going to try to get by with what they have. And, you know, Adrian Kempe had a hat trick the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's their top rookie in the lineup right now. Tyler Toffoli can put the puck in the net. Tanner Pearson can put the puck in the net. I don't see them making a drastic move. I mean, I could see them making a move, but I don't think they're going to make a trade to get a player of Jeff Carter's ilk coming the other way back.
I was going to say, the only thing that's interesting is that they've got a big six-game road trip coming up. And so you'll see, I think they're going out east. I know it starts in Columbus. And so I think what will you see from them after this, in this segment of games,
this chunk of
will
games,
really
yeah.
kind of determine. Because right now they're, what, 5-0-1, first in the Pacific? So
That's correct.
You know, that's a team that's, you know, you've already kind of established yourself. You've built up some points. You've got a little bit of a buffer. So you may ride it out, seeing what you've got in Brooks like now and other players, see if you can sustain it somewhat. And then if you can, then you don't have to make a big move.
Cavallari actually had 4 points the other night.
The Colorado Avalanche
have been one
of the surprise teams of the season. They've come back down to earth since then, and now they've lost two of their best young players. J.D. Compher and Tyson Yost are both going to be out of the lineup for multiple weeks, as Compher has a broken thumb and Yost has a lower body injury. I don't think anybody expected the Avalanche to be able to sustain the quality start to the year, but I think this is really going to impact them going forward.
Well, I mean, you're talking about two rookies, Drew. I mean,
on a team with no talent, though.
Right, but I mean, you weren't expecting J.T. Compher and Tyson Jost to lead your offense this year. You were hoping, you know, that they had good rookie years. But I mean, Colorado's not a very good team. I mean, they've got off to a good start here. Let's see where they're at after 15 or 20 games. But I don't necessarily know that these two injuries are going to make or break their season. I agree with you. I mean, they can use as much offense as they can get. But, I mean, the drivers of this team are still Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, Matt Duchene. I mean, these are your primary scorers. When you're talking about J.T. Compher and Tyson Jost, I mean, again, they're rookies. J.T. Compher was a great rookie with the University of Michigan, got a taste of the NHL last year, and he's had a good start to the season so far this year. And Tyson Jost, obviously, coming from the University of North Dakota. But, again, I mean, we're talking about rookies on a bad team.
Fair enough. Into Boston, where the Bruins have had the injury bug bite a number of times so far this season. They've lost Tuukka Rask to a concussion. Adam McQuaid is going to be out 8 weeks with a broken right fibula. And
I was watching that game live, by the way.
Where he broke his leg?
Blocking that shot.
Yeah.
And that looked really painful.
Yeah. I mean, you block a shot with your leg.
But I'm just saying, I didn't know that he had a broken fibula.
Right.
Just watching that game live, you thought, okay, well, he's going to go to the bench and he's going to go to the dressing room. But it's terrible to see because Adam McQuaid, as you know, Drew, has had a lot of injury problems throughout his career.
Mm-hmm. The last injury is Ryan Spooner. He's got a groin tear. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Bruins, you know, they were without David Backes to start the year, and so they've been able to sort of tread water. But just as they start to get healthy, they get banged up again. That's sort of a difficult situation for the Bruins to be in. 3-3 on the season for 6 points in six games.
Yeah, what's surprising is Boston's actually not having problems scoring. It's keeping the puck out of their own net.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, you know, Tuukka Rask has the concussion. You know, David Backes didn't have a very good year last year. Patrice Bergeron just came back, had a great first game back, scored a goal. So it's unfortunate. Ryan Spooner is one of those guys, you know, provides secondary offense for the Bruins, but, you know, they're going to get healthier as it goes along here, and it's early on in the season, and obviously they have other players that can contribute, but they're banged up right now. So, you know, you wonder if they're going to make a move here.
Last one, Dave, goes to Vancouver, where they lose Louis Erickson for 4 to 6 weeks with a knee sprain, and Alex Edler for 4 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain. Another not very good hockey team, which is might be putting it charitably, that the Canucks lose two of their veteran leaders, I would suggest.
Yeah, I mean, but this is a Vancouver team that really, as we all knew, weren't going to be a very competitive team anyway. So sure, it's never a good thing to lose players, especially, like you said, Drew, veterans on a team that's kind of on the treading water path. But at the end of the day, you know, that's fine because you can give the opportunity to a Brock Besser or young players in the organization to kind of come up from your farm system and kind of see what they've got and what they can provide. Because at the end of the day, Vancouver's in, you know, a rebuild mode, which seems to be a dirty word. But at the, you know, like I said, even though it's early in the season, it's always disheartening as fans would sit back and know that their team has essentially no chance at making the playoffs or really doing anything significant this season. You know, you still want to have some hope when you go to games, but at the same time, it's probably an opportunity to get some young players in from Utica, I believe. So they'll have to see what they've got in the AHL.
Now, Dave, Louis Erickson's been disappointing. If you remember, they gave him some big bucks in the offseason.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he didn't have a good year last year.
He gave him, what, $6 million a season, if
yeah,
I'm not mistaken?
Sounds right.
Yeah, it was a bad contract when they signed it because nobody was sure what the point of it was, and he certainly hasn't lived up to it. So it's sort of a double whammy in that sense. When we come back, we touch base with the TSN Hockey Insiders. Another edition of Insider Trading aired on TSN. We'll recap it and see what's going on around the league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This hour is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, a few tickets left to see Ian Bagg. The 7:15 show is completely sold out. A few tickets left for the 10 o'clock show. You can get them at RumorsComedyClub.com. And a reminder, coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, a very special comedy concert series event, pardon me. If you've never seen him before, he's one of my favorites, the Incredible Boris, comedy hypnotist. You will laugh like nobody's business. I can't stress it enough. If you're looking for something to do on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, the Jets, they're off, of course. Check out the Incredible Boris at Rumors Comedy Club. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. He's fantastic. The guys at Insider Trading, the TSN Hockey Insiders, got together for another round. Here's what they had to say. We'll talk about it on the way back afterwards.
A duet of insiders on this day. It's Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie. This is exciting or not. I think we're about to celebrate our one-year anniversary of talking about Matt Duchene on Insider Trading. In fact, we may have already passed that. Are we any closer to a deal?
Well, it depends who you ask. Some believe that Joe Sakic is actually mulling over some legitimate interest and pieces, part of a package perhaps, that he finds at least enticing at this stage. But look, if I took you back to the draft in June, you know, there were opportunities at that point, and there were packages presented to Sakic in the moment that he found interesting. So it's hard to say. What it is an endless cycle. The New York Rangers are a classic example of a team that initially was in, then they were out. Recently, they're back in. They're just revisiting, but they don't think that there's anything even remotely possible. So it could happen, but it might not.
Another big-name center is down and out. The Kings off to a great start at 5-0-1, but Jeff Carter gone minimum 6 to 8 weeks after having surgery for some tendon damage in his ankle. What do they do without Jeff Carter?
Well, obviously, it's a big blow to their team because he is such a dynamic performer, but in the very short term, Brooks Like has signed a one-year, two-way deal, $650,000 in the NHL, $50,000 in the minors. Now, this was agreed to. The Like deal was agreed to even before Carter injured his ankle last night in that game against the Montreal Canadiens. What it does, though, it accelerates. Instead of having Like maybe in the minors for a couple of weeks, he's going to find himself on the Kings roster sooner rather than later. Now, we did talk about the possibility that the Kings could trade one of their defensemen, like Jake Muzzin or Alec Martinez, because they feel like they've got the depth to be able to do that. Sample size so far on their young defenseman is still too small that they're prepared to give up one of those top four defensemen for a forward. So they'll monitor the situation as they go. And in the meantime, just try to get by with Like and everybody else pitching in.
Jim Rutherford and the Pittsburgh Penguins are in the market for a center, and he has been for quite some time, I would say, just to augment what they have in considerable talent up the middle of the ice there. There's been some speculation as to who might be available as to players who aren't, and Matt Duchene probably isn't a great fit financially for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but Alex Galchenyuk from the Montreal Canadiens, his name has surfaced, and we shouldn't be overly surprised by that, again, given the fact that more often than not, Galchenyuk seems to be in the doghouse there. And given the play of the Montreal Canadiens of late, perhaps there's a fit there that makes some sense.
Please do not tell me that Andreas Athanasiou is going to be the next Matt Duchene, and we're going to be talking about this for an entire year because we're about 2 weeks running now.
It can only go to December 1st because if he's right, not signed by then, he's out of the NHL for this season. But here's the latest development. The Detroit Red Wings had offered Athanasiou a two-year deal at $1.9 million per year. Now that the season is on and the Red Wings are in LTIR situation, they no longer can give that deal to Andreas Athanasiou. So if Athanasiou is going to sign with the Red Wings, it's likely going to be a one-year deal now at a shade more than the $1.25 million that the Red Wings were offering him in the summer. There is an incredibly high level of exasperation on both sides, from the Red Wings and from Athanasiou. This thing's either going to get done here in the next day or so, or it's likely he's going to sign to play in Europe, and who knows when or if he'll be back in the Red Wing lineup.
So Patrick Roy shows up at a news conference in Quebec City on Wednesday. Has nothing to do with hockey. He's supporting Anne-Catherine Tanguay, a golfer from the area. But, of course, when Patrick Roy's there and there's microphones there, they're going to ask him about his future. What does he say?
Well, look, I mean, he's more or less an NHL recluse. He's acknowledging, though, that he does have interest in getting back into the National Hockey League. Now, a quote was provided because, obviously, there was interest in the golfer, and they swarmed Patrick Roy to talk about his potential future, both FM 93 and Les Salles providing quotes. If ever a team called, for sure I would listen, but the more it goes, the more that I'm sensing that it's in the management side that interests me more. It's not that I'm not interested in coaching, said Roy, but the management side is more interesting for me. And might be a bit ill-timed given what's going on with Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens, although I don't expect that there'll be change in Montreal in season there.
That's TSN's insider trading segment. Want to make note, of course, that Andreas Athanasiou did sign a one-year, $1.387 million contract. So that saga has finally been taken care of.
Because, Double A.
Yeah, nobody really, I mean, a lot of ink was spilled about a guy who's not overwhelmingly impactful. A guy who is impactful and has had ad nauseum amounts of ink spilled is Matt Duchene. Can you believe we're still on this? I mean, is Joe Sakic just paralyzed to trade this guy? Like, what's going to break that all of a sudden makes him trade him? Well, who's coming to the table with a different offer at this point in time that's going to get that deal done? It's just paralysis by inaction with Joe Sakic in Colorado and Matt Duchene. And to credit, you know, to Duchene's credit, he's playing well to start the year in an impossible situation.
Yeah, not only is he playing well, Drew, but the team is playing well, right?
Well, playing better than you thought they would. They're they're 500, which nobody would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what you'd expect, you know, the Colorado Avalanche to be towards the bottom of the standings with the Arizona Coyotes, and you can throw the Vegas Golden Knights in there as well as the most surprising teams, right? Along with the Devils and some others. But look, I think, Drew, we all thought that Matt Duchene would have been on another team by now, and it hasn't happened. I think a lot of teams still want Matt Duchene, but we know that the asking price is high. I mean, this has been the same situation for the last, what, 4 or 5 months now?
Longer than that, honestly. It seems like it just never ends.
But we really thought that there was an impending trade coming, right?
Sure.
So when you're talking about Duchene, I mean, he's going to get traded eventually, we think.
Honestly, not that you hear that Joe Sakic's job is in jeopardy, but if they went that way, can you rebuild the relationship with Matt Duchene? I mean, who's more important to the Colorado organization? Matt Duchene or Joe Sakic, who has proven to be a below-average general manager?
Yeah, well, he happens to be a Hall of Famer.
Hey, no.
And a two-time Stanley Cup champion.
Of course. So if you want to look at it on the, you know, in terms of the historic relevance, it's clearly Joe Sakic. But in the here and now,
it's Joe Sakic.
Still?
He's the GM.
I know, but who's more valuable to the team? A below-average general manager or an above-average NHL player?
Well, it's not all on Joe Sakic. I mean, the team was a mess before Joe Sakic joined the organization, Drew. I don't have to remind you that.
That's true.
Right? But, I think Joe Sakic has made some poor moves. I agree with you. I'm not saying that every move he's made has been bad, but he has made some poor moves. So when you're talking about, you know, Matt Duchene and whether or not that relationship can be repaired, I think that time has passed. I don't think it can be repaired. I mean, how many times has he almost been traded? Right?
Forever.
We thought he might be going to the Columbus Blue Jackets. We thought he might be going to the Nashville Predators. We thought he might be going to the New York Rangers. I don't know if you can just now forget that
Canadians,
that didn't happen, right?
Pittsburgh Penguins.
Exactly.
I mean,
there have been
nauseam.
Like 6 or 8 teams
that
have been interested in Duchene. So, hey, maybe he does stick with the Colorado Avalanche, but when you're a rebuilding team like the Avalanche, you mentioned, I mean, JT Compher, Tyson Jost, Mikko Rantanen, Cale Makar is a guy that they have high hopes for, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's at least 1 or 2 years away.
He had a hat trick last night for the Wheat Kings. Cale Makar did.
No, that's Cale
Clegg. Cale Clegg, sorry. Yeah. Cale Clegg.
He's a Kings draft pick.
Yeah, Kings, yeah. I got my Kales mixed up.
That's all good. When you're talking about Duchene, though, I mean, why are you keeping a player like Duchene when you know you're not going to be a playoff team for the next 2 or 3 years? That's my point. Why not trade him and get some assets back?
Well, trade him then. Just get on with it.
The problem was that nobody would answer the call for what they were asking. Right.
They wanted
2 first-round picks, and reportedly, so...
Well, apparently what they wanted from Nashville was Ryan Ellis in a first-round pick.
Right.
And there's no way that David Poile is doing that. Ryan Ellis is too good of a defenseman to give up on. And, I mean, Nashville has other guys that can put the puck in the net.
Isn't Ryan Ellis for Matt Duchene straight up more of a reasonable trade?
I don't even know if I would do that.
Well, I
really like Ryan Ellis.
No, I don't know that I would do that either from Nashville's perspective because...
Actually, you probably would do that.
Well, their defense is so good. The thing is, Sam Girard has looked very good on the defense.
Well, he's been a surprise, though. They didn't think he was going to be in the NHL this early.
They didn't, but when Roman Josi was out of the lineup, and actually we'll talk about Girard next segment when we look at rookies approaching their 10-game status. But, I mean, that's the only time you would do it is if you think you have somebody who can easily step in and fill the role.
No, it is a good point. I hate to say it again. Whenever you make good points, I hate it.
I know. It bothers you.
But, I mean, going back to, you know, Galchenyuk and all of these rumors, unless the price is right, they're not moving Duchene, right? So what's the rush, right? Like, if you're Joe Sakic, why not just hold on to him?
Well, because you
trade him at the trade deadline.
Well, because you were supposed to trade him at last year's trade deadline. And no, I'm not saying that.
The only risk you run into, really, is an injury. Because the fact is, teams, it's not like teams are going to be like, whoa, eureka moment, now I know what I'm getting with Matt Duchene. I mean, the fact is, everybody knows the kind of player he is and what he can bring to their team. So from a Colorado perspective, you sit on the asset until a team, you know, I mean, it's a better benefit, I think, to get to a team that's more desperate at the trade deadline and willing to make a move so they can kind of augment their team and try and get over that to that next level than you are right now, as opposed to the only risk you run, in my mind, is an injury to Matt Duchene that could cost him the year. But other than that, I think that there's no advantage because it seems like that the questions aren't coming up as frequently. He had to address them early on in the season. Now he's kind of addressed them. They're not being talked about, and he can just play hockey with his teammates. And he obviously doesn't have a problem with his teammates from our perspective. We don't know. We're obviously not in Colorado to the same degree as we would see here in Winnipeg. So for that perspective, I mean, how much interaction does Kevin Cheveldayoff have with the players on a daily basis? He doesn't. So the truth is, does Joe Sakic really impact Matt Duchene on a daily basis? Does the ownership really impact Matt Duchene on a daily basis? No. So as long as he's getting along with the coaching staff and he's getting along with his teammates, you can continue that situation. It's not untenable. And obviously, like I said, he's there and he's playing hockey. So I think from an asset manager perspective, you're better off waiting till a team is really thinking that they're, quote, that one piece away, that are going to be willing to give up a few more assets than you'd get right now.
Guys, someone is going to pay a high price for Matt Duchene. I don't know if it's going to be a first-round pick and a top-four defenseman, but guys like Matt Duchene who have, you know, 30-goal potential, I mean, those guys don't grow on trees, so someone's going to give up a lot to get him before the trade deadline.
They haven't done it yet, so I'm a little more hesitant that Joe Sakic has overplayed his hand and might now just have to get the best offer possible and deal with it at that point in time. In any event, we'll continue to monitor the situation. I suspect that it might be going on until we are older and grayer than we currently are today. When we come back, we look at the rookies that are playing in the NHL this season. The 10-game mark is approaching. Who should stay in the NHL and who should go back to junior? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The sharp angle shot by Hall, stopped by Anderson, wraparound, try to score! Tapped home by Nisier. That's his first National Hockey League goal. And the Devils take a 1-0 lead. And now Moore with a shot to the flex wide. Who's pucking the sound? Go Anderson down. Heischer pokes at it, and he scores. Heischer's got two in the first 6 minutes of the first period.
Those two goals by Nico Heischer were the first in his NHL career, first of many to come for the New Jersey Devils. We, of course, spoke about Heischer earlier on in the program with Matt Lachlan, New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster. Heischer, one of those young players who does still have junior hockey eligibility, but I think it's safe to say so far this season, Ezzy and Dave, that Nico Heischer isn't going anywhere except to maybe to Vegas at the end of the year for the NHL Awards as the Calder Trophy winner.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's going to play the full season with the Devils. And, you know, we talked to Matt Lachlan during the second hour about Jesper Bratt. He's really been the big surprise. He was a late round pick of the Devils a couple years back.
Sixth round pick, yes, Jesper Bratt was.
Yeah, and as Matt mentioned, you know, he's been out there on the penalty kill. He's played a little power play. But, I mean, Nico Heischer, I mean, he's right up there with the most skilled young players in the league. He's maybe not a generational player like Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews, but he's a point per game so far for the Devils. So, as we said earlier, he's not going anywhere, and you know he's probably the most exciting player to watch, maybe with the exception of McDavid and Matthews right now, because he has all the skill in the world. Kind of reminds you, too, of Nikolaj Ehlers, who also played for Halifax.
Absolutely. Dave, moving to Ottawa, where they have Logan Brown. He's only played one game for the Senators thus far, but is still up with the team, sitting in the press box more often than not. Do you expect that he's going to stick around, or do you think the Senators make the decision that it's best to have him back in the OHL, continuing his junior career and potentially playing a key role for Team Canada at the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships in Buffalo?
Yeah, you think of a player, when you're not getting into that many games, that you're most likely going to be sent back. And it's, again, we've seen it with so many players like Mark Scheifele and a variety of others, that it's not necessarily a bad thing to get that opportunity to kind of develop your game properly and at a lower level. So, he's a good young player, but I don't see him sticking with Ottawa.
What's interesting about Logan Brown, of course, son of former NHLer Jeff Brown, he was born in the U.S. He could actually play for both.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those rare players he would actually have played for the team USA, Drew, but he has represented Canada before.
Okay.
But just something interesting. I mean, Tyler Myers is another one of those guys.
Sure.
Right? He grew up in both Canada and the U.S., so right. He could play for Canada or the U.S. Same thing with Logan Brown.
Yeah.
One of those rare Houston-born NHLers.
It's true. But Houston, I don't have it in the show plan, but it'll probably appear in the show plan sooner rather than later.
Team 32.
Team 32 being in Houston. We know that the new owner there, the guy who bought the Houston Rockets, mm-hmm. and bought the arena, also badly wants an NHL team. And when somebody who's got billions upon billions of dollars says he wants a franchise, oftentimes he gets it.
So what, all of a sudden Seattle's not going to get a team now?
They might be, I don't know. It's a good question. There seems to be Houston, Seattle. I mean, we know about Quebec City, but it'll be an interesting phenomenon. The NHL loves money so much, they'll go to 34, 35, 36 teams.
I don't think so.
Maybe they'll put a team on the island of Atlantis or something if somebody wants to play there.
Drew, getting back to Logan Brown, I agree with Dave. I think Warren Reichel is going to get him back for the Windsor Spitfires.
Yeah, good friend of the program, of course.
Yeah, I don't think that he is going to stay. And that's just because Ottawa has so much depth at the forward position, right? And they're off to a pretty good start so far this year. So, I mean, Logan Brown obviously has a bright future in the NHL, but right now he just can't seem to get into the lineup.
We saw him play on Tuesday night for the Blue Jackets. That's Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's played 7 games thus far. Only has 1 goal on the season. Is he going to stick in Columbus, or do you think he gets returned to the QMJHL?
My gut feeling is that Pierre-Luc Dubois stays in the NHL, because if you remember, last year we thought that he might start the season with the Columbus Blue Jackets, but he obviously spent the entire year in the QMJHL. So he's not off to the greatest start. He had a decent game against the Jets here on Tuesday night, but, I mean, this is a third overall pick, and he's got all the talent in the world. And I know now that he's playing kind of more of a third line role for the Columbus Blue Jackets, but I think they're willing to wait and let his offensive game develop. So I do think Dubois sticks in the NHL.
It's funny because, again, a lot of these players, we see them in more limited roles because, especially if they're out east, we don't get to see their games as much. But I was impressed by his game. I mean, perhaps it was because his father, assistant coach of the Manitoba Moose, Eric Dubois, was in the crowd, and his parents, I should say, and maybe that was that emphasis. But I thought he looked great against the Jets. I thought he played a more physical game than I anticipated. He has a bit more grit to his game than I was really thinking of. I thought he played a nice game. And again, that's such a deep Columbus team that if he can crack the lineup, it's a good opportunity for him.
In Nashville, we just spoke about him last segment. Samuel Girard is a defenseman there. He had 3 points in 3 games. He got into the lineup when Roman Josi was out of the lineup. How do you think they handle Girard? He's obviously not playing right now significant minutes or getting into games really at all, given the depth on the Predators' defense. How do you think they should handle Samuel Girard going forward?
Well, I'll tell you this much right now. Dave and I were in Buffalo for the 2016 draft. We thought that Samuel Girard might be a guy that the Jets might look at. And right now, at 47th overall, he's looking like the steal of that draft because he's come into the NHL and he's looked really good. He hasn't looked out of place. And I don't think the Predators, I think they would tell you this themselves, they didn't think that he was going to play this early in his career. And, it's interesting, right, because you have Ryan Ellis out of the lineup. Roman Josi is going to be back in the lineup, I think, within the next week, if I'm not mistaken. But, it looks like he's going to stay. I mean, it's an interesting one. I haven't watched him play a ton at the NHL level. I've seen him play a little bit in junior. But, I mean, the way he's been playing, they really like him. So that's a tough one.
Well, first of all, he has the greatest name ever. U.S. Marshals, if you guys remember, the great Samuel Girard.
Well, I just like the name Samuel.
Okay. Oh, that's a good point.
Thank you.
But no, you know what? He's an interesting player. Got some games in with the Milwaukee Admirals last season. Played it when his junior season ended. He played six games in the AHL. I mean, again, he's a young defenseman. So to me, it's not necessarily a bad thing, especially when you have the depth that Nashville does, to allow a player like that to marinate a little bit and develop. He's not a big kid. I think he's only about 5'10". So, and that's not a knock on him. It's just something, you know, handling the size and strength of opposing forwards is a little bit more difficult. So you kind of want a player who's developed a little bit more. We'll see.
In Carolina, and he played in Winnipeg last Saturday night for the Hurricanes. Yanni Kuokkanen is a centerman. He's only 19 years old.
Easy for you to say, Drew.
Yeah, no kidding. He is AHL eligible, so he's sort of an interesting case because he comes from Finland. So he is eligible to go down to the AHL despite being sort of underage to the AHL. Do you expect that's going to be a move the Hurricanes make? He's only played in three games so far this season. No points thus far.
Yeah, I was impressed watching him the one game. I mean, he's got a lot of speed. Another guy that was taken second round back in the 2016 draft. He's got decent size, but you know, with that Carolina Hurricanes team and the depth that they have now at forward, I don't think that he stays up, but you know, he's shown them something. I was surprised that he made the team. There were some injuries there, so that allowed him to stick in the lineup, but it doesn't look like he's going to stay in the NHL.
For this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. We're just talking about for this year.
Yeah.
We're not talking about long term. Nolan Patrick on the Philadelphia Flyers, of course, was the...
Oh, come on, Drew. Just Nolan Patrick.
Just making sure.
He's my pick for the Calder.
Well, how's that going for you?
Off to a good start.
Yeah, I know. I'm just teasing you. He's got three points in his first seven games. He's not going anywhere with the Philadelphia Flyers at this point in the time. Owen Tippett in Florida, also an interesting young player. How do you think he's going to be handled by the Panthers going forward? Only played two games so far for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't watched Owen Tippett play at the NHL level. I've seen him play at the Ontario Hockey League level, but when you're talking about, you know, the amount of games he's playing there, it kind of looks like he's a contender to be sent back to the Ontario Hockey League. I know that the Florida Panthers are really high on him. They were really happy to get him 11th overall. He was the second player out of the Ontario Hockey League to be selected. He was kind of late. A lot of people thought Tippett might go like as high as 6th or 7th overall, so they were really happy, I know, to get him 11th overall. You got to ask yourself, too, is he better suited to be in the press box, or is he better suited to be in the Ontario Hockey League playing on a top line, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's going back to Mississauga.
That's always the big problem with the, you know, for the players who are eligible to go down to the AHL, if you tear it up at the AHL, it's no problem bringing them back up. It's the ones who are go down to the OHL, and then they have to sort of stuck there for the remainder of the year, except for the very rare emergency situations.
You know, and that's okay for him. I mean, he gets a taste of the NHL. He gets to, you know, see how the big boys play, you know, guys like Alexander Barkov, Jonathan Huberdeau, and the like. But if he's not going to play and he's not ready, then there's no problem in leaving him in the OHL for one more year. We saw what that did for Mark Scheifele, right?
So. Certainly. Scheifele, 2 years, of course.
Yep.
In Montreal, he was sort of the story coming out of the training camp on a weak Habs back end. Victor Mete staying with the Habs? Or can the Habs even afford to send him back, given their struggles so far this season?
He's on the top pairing with Shea Weber right now. I don't know how you do it. I mean, perhaps it doesn't... that's the problem as an organization when you have these young players is you have to look at it from a now perspective, you know, because most organizations are in win now versus long term. Do you take the chance of ruining someone's development by keeping them up? But when you're in a situation like in Montreal, like who are you replacing him with? So, in theory, again, to me, defensemen generally are more of a development long-term project unless they're top picks. But you know, here's the situation where you have a young guy, but he's playing in your top pairing with your number one defenseman. What are you going to do? You can't really afford to send him down.
Yeah, well, and look how they're doing, right? I mean, they're struggling big time. Mm-hmm. Victor Mete, I think most scouts would agree, went too far in the draft. A lot of scouts had him going in the second round, and he went in the fourth round of Montreal. So I think he looks like a great prospect. But look at right now how the Habs are doing. They're struggling big time defensively. I mean, you shouldn't have Victor Mete playing a top pairing role.
Right.
You just shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his
playing
first
20 minutes a game.
Right. It's his first year in the NHL. And he's got all the skill in the world. And, you know, by all accounts, by people that watch the Habs on a regular basis, you know, he's playing really well. And it looks like there's a good chance he stays in the NHL. But you wonder if this is too much too soon.
And you wonder if the Habs were a better team, would he be getting the opportunity that he's getting?
Right.
Last one, Kyler Yamamoto of the Edmonton Oilers. He's got 3 points in five games. We know, I mean, he's fantastically skilled, and he's fantastically small. Charitably, I think, registered at 5'8", 154 pounds. Is Yamamoto going to stay up for the entire season with the Oilers?
Well, everyone in Edmonton is saying that he is going to stick with the Oilers, and he's been playing on the top line with Connor McDavid, so it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. And he's had a pretty good start to his NHL career. So I don't think many people thought, you know, he was just drafted in Chicago, mm-hmm. you know, what, 6 months ago. So
yeah, 22nd overall, plays for Spokane, or he's from Spokane, pardon me.
4 months ago, not yeah. 6 months ago. But okay. The point is, I don't think many thought that he was going to play in the NHL this year. Many people thought he was going to go back to Spokane. And that's because he's 18 years old, right? But mm-hmm. Got all the skill in the world. I think he's staying.
Well, I think it'll be interesting when Draisaitl's back and he's getting close to being back, how that affects Yamamoto and where he plays in the lineup.
He just drops down, right? I don't think he's going to drop down to the Western Hockey League, but most likely I think you want Yamamoto probably on the second or third line, right? Not on the top line, but
sure.
He's got the skill, though. I mean, you watch him and he's fast. He's got great hands, good shot. I mean, I think they got a steal there at 22nd overall.
When we come back, Chris Peters of ESPN.com joins us. We'll talk about some prospects who are coming up and going to be draft eligible. Also talk about some college hockey prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. It's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN.com, he's their prospects and college hockey expert. Chris Peters joins us. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
Our pleasure, Chris. Always appreciate your time. Chris, we started, of course, looking at some of the draft prospects for the upcoming 2018 NHL draft, even though it's still a good 8 months away, give or take. Rasmus Dahlin is the consensus number one overall prospect for the 2018 draft. The Swedish defenseman has drawn comparisons to Erik Karlsson of the Ottawa Senators. In your mind, how far ahead is Dahlin from the rest of the pack of the other top-rated prospects for the 2018 draft?
Yeah, well, I think it is kind of tiered off a bit, and he's certainly at the top of the tier. I don't think Andrei Svechnikov from the Barrie Colts, who's now out with an injury, I don't think he's terribly far off. I think he's going to at least challenge. But in my mind, it's really difficult to look at anybody and kind of look at Rasmus Dahlin and see what he does on a night-in, night-out basis at a very high level and has been doing it for the last couple of years. And the creativity that you see from him, from the blue line. And, you know, I think I'm not sure that he's the skater that Erik Karlsson is, but the creativity is there, the playmaking ability, his confidence with the puck. I mean, these are all these things that you certainly want to see in a player of his caliber. And a defenseman, particularly, that's going to go number one. You have to be incredibly impressive as a blue liner to be the number one draft pick. And we've seen it with Aaron Ekblad. We've seen it in the past where guys that weren't as dynamic, like an Eric Johnson back in the day, you know, and guys that have challenged for the first overall pick in recent years. To me, he's the most dynamic of those players, and that is what really intrigues me about him being a potential number one. So I think that he's the clear consensus guy, but Svechnikov, depending on how he comes back from this injury, could potentially challenge just because he's an intriguing forward, but I still don't see anybody catching Dahlin.
Now, Chris, you just mentioned Andrei Svechnikov of the Barrie Colts of the Ontario Hockey League, suffers the broken hand this past week. How much can an injury like that affect his draft stock this early in the season?
Well, I don't think it affects it too much early in the season. I think everybody knows what he is, and having such a tremendous start, 10 goals in 10 games in the OHL, and I figured that he would be a dominant player. He was one of the best young players in the USHL that I've seen in a long, long time in terms of, you know, not a lot of guys can go into that league at 16 years old and be a dominant offensive force. That's what he was. He's physically so far ahead of some of the kids in his peer group, and just the way that he uses his strength and his skill are really impressive. So I think that everybody kind of knows what he is. And so the issue now is, how is he going to come back from this injury? How is he going to respond? How, you know, so that I think in a holding pattern, I don't see him getting overtaken by anybody in that number two slot. But it'll just be, how does he respond to this? And that tells you a lot about a player. It's not just about the skill level, which we already know that he has. It's not about the strength, which we know that he has. But how does he, you know, get back up to speed after a pretty long layoff? You know, eight weeks potentially here, where he's not going to be playing hockey. He's going to miss a significant amount of time. You know, I think back to when Connor McDavid broke his hand. Obviously, that was never going to affect anybody's opinion about him. But still, you want to see, how do they respond? What's the mentality like? Do you have the ability to kind of shake that off and not favor that hand and just go right back to being the player that you were? I don't think that Svechnikov is going to have any problem with that, and I don't see it really affecting him too much, because we already know what he is, and I think that he has such a good track record from his previous season that nobody's really going to be worried about him.
Chris, Brady Tkachuk of the powerhouse Boston University Terriers is a projected top five pick for the 18 draft. How does he compare to his brother Matthew, and what are his greatest strengths as a player?
Well, you know, I think he compares very favorably to Matthew. The one thing I think in his draft year and even the year before, Matthew had the great fortune of playing with guys like Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews before he was drafted, which is a pretty great place to be. But I always thought that kind of overshadowed Matthew's ability as just a great thinker of the game and his mentality. And I think that Brady, I'm not 100% positive he has the same hockey sense that Matthew does, but I do think that he has the talent and the ability. And I think he, in his draft season, is physically a little further ahead than where Matthew was. And it's not significant, because I think they are very similar. I think Brady's got even, as nasty as Matthew is right now, I think Brady has even more of an edge in his game. He uses his body incredibly well. He's such a big kid and so strong. And even as a true freshman in college hockey, he is a physically dominant forward already. Now, the numbers, we're gonna have to keep a close eye on. Matthew was able to put up really gaudy numbers in the OHL. He did very well, had a great line, played on a Memorial Cup team. Boston University is really young, and in college hockey, having a young team and lacking experience can really challenge you as a team, and we've seen that already this year, where they haven't been as good as we kind of anticipated them. But it's October, it's early. That kind of happens in college hockey. These teams get off to slow starts. But Brady in particular, you start seeing all the things that he does so well, which is particularly his ability to make plays. He's an excellent passer. He sees the ice incredibly well. He has great net front presence with the size that he's at. He does a lot of things extraordinarily well in and around the net. So I think that the numbers will come. He's got, I believe, 3 assists so far this season. So not necessarily the most inspiring numbers, but BU is just layered with prospects, and he's been playing a lot with Shane Bowers and Patrick Harper, who are the two other most talented forwards on that roster. So I think that we'll start seeing those numbers come for him, and I think that he's very much going to remain in the top five conversation throughout the year. It's just that his numbers may not look as impressive as some of the other players playing major junior, because it is so much harder produce in college hockey.
Chris Peters is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris is with ESPN.com, covering the world of U.S. college hockey and draft prospects. Chris, Quinn Hughes is an American defenseman playing at the University of Michigan. He's expected to be a top 10 pick at the upcoming draft. Some scouts believe he has a higher ceiling than fellow American defenseman Zach Werenski and Charlie McAvoy, so you know he's in pretty good company. What has stood out to you when watching Quinn Hughes?
The thing I love about Quinn Hughes is how aggressive he is offensively and how much he gets into plays. And last year, I got a chance to see him with the under 18 team, and I noticed how often he was confident enough to rush the puck. He can be a one man breakout. He's really confident through the neutral zone. He can be, you know, the guy that makes the zone entry for you as opposed to a forward. He is very aggressive in that way, and sometimes it does get him burned, but he picks his spots extraordinarily well. And I remember speaking to one of the coaches at the National Team Development Program last year and saying, you know, is it just, does he always have the green light? And they had so much faith in him that they just wanted him to go, go, go. Now playing in college hockey as a true freshman defenseman, very difficult to do. We saw Zach Werenski do it masterfully. We saw Noah Hannafin do it very well. And they were actually even younger than Quinn Hughes is now and did it very well. I think that he's going to have an exceptional season for Michigan. The Big Ten isn't necessarily the toughest conference, so that should allow him to put up big numbers. Obviously, we saw what Kyle Connor did to that league a couple of years ago. It's a little bit better now, I think, in terms of quality of competition. Notre Dame has been added to the Big Ten this year, so he's going to get challenged night in, night out. He's not, at this point, hasn't lit up the score sheets, but Michigan hasn't played a ton yet. I think we're going to see him in a very, very prominent role at the World Junior Championship, which is going to give a lot of us a really good idea of what he can do. And we saw a little bit of it at the World Junior Camp this summer in Plymouth, Michigan, where he was getting pucks to the net, making plays, making the guys around him better. I think he is just one of those. He's very different than a Werenski and a McAvoy in terms of, you know, the reason that I think his ceiling is so high is because of his puck skills, his stick handling, his passing, his shooting. There's so much that he does well with that. He's obviously a very good skater, but he doesn't have the size. So he has to really compensate for that with those puck skills. And I think that that's the reason why people look at him. I think he may, I don't love doing comparisons, but, you know, I think he compares even a little bit more favorably to Carlson than Dahlin does because of what he does offensively. I think both of them are incredibly skilled in this draft in particular. Is outstanding for offensive defensemen. So I love seeing the puck movers, and Quinn Hughes is certainly one of the most exciting in a while.
Chris, Joe Valino of the St. John Sea Dogs, he was the first player to ever be granted exceptional status in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Some scouts have him in their top 10. Some scouts have him out of their top 10. What do you think the ceiling is for Valino at the NHL level?
Well, you know, it's interesting. He's a guy that I need to see more of before I can be more comfortable in terms of an all-out NHL projection. But from what I've seen so far, the skills are there. The speed is there. There's so much that he does that excites me in terms of, as a prospect. So I do need to see him more just to get a better handle. And I want to see him, you know, in those games against the very tip-top of competition. The numbers that he put up in the OHL last year, or in the QMJHL, sorry, last year, were good. They were good numbers for a young player. They weren't earth-shattering. They didn't necessarily catch a lot of attention. I think that he has, like, the skills that could be in a top-10 situation. Now we got to see if those numbers come with it, because if the numbers aren't there, then you start wondering, what's missing? What are the things that aren't there? And certainly not all about statistics, but when you're looking at a top-end offensive player, they matter, and they matter a lot. And I think that, you know, if we can see, is he going to be, you know, a point, 1.3 points per game player in the QMJHL. Is that a fair thing to expect of him? Maybe not, but can he be at least a point per game player? I think that's one benchmark that we'd be looking at with him. What else can he do to elevate his game? What tournaments is he going to get in that maybe give us a better idea? I don't know that he'll end up making the Canadian junior team just based on the depth that they have. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that certainly has the potential. And if he gets into that position, what can he do with that? So there's a lot that I need to see in terms of just more viewings with him. But when you look at the puck skills and the speed alone, I think that those are things that obviously jump out to you, and I just want to see more of that. So I think we'll have to readdress that in a couple more weeks when I get a chance to see him a bit more. But certainly a player that excites me and a guy that I'll have a close eye on.
Chris, the University of North Dakota is currently ranked number 4 in the USCHO rankings with a 3-1 record after 4 games. In your opinion, is this still an upper echelon team in college hockey, even without Brock Besser and Tucker Pullman?
Yeah, they are. You know, I think that they're going to they have a lot of adjustments left to make. But you look at guys like Shane Gersich, having Cam Johnson in net, they have good players. You know, bringing in Grant Mismatch, they've got players that can absolutely keep them among the top teams. Are they as exciting? I don't think so. You know, losing guys like Besser and Jost and Kuhlman, of course, that's a difficult group of players to replace. And I don't know that they have the personnel to do it adequately enough. But what we're seeing right now in the very, very early going of the of this season so far is, you know, basically that they're still trying to find their way a little bit. And we're not seeing a ton of teams really jumping off the page right now in terms of, you know, what they're doing in their early stages. And as I mentioned, in October, very difficult to figure out what these teams are. We need to see them for more games. They haven't had a ton of practice time with coaches leading up to the season, so they haven't gotten into that rhythm. But we all know that North Dakota is an extremely well-coached team. Brad Berry is going to have them playing very well. They played a tight game against Minnesota last night. Very interested to see how they do against a very high-powered offensive team once again in a very exciting series. So I think that North Dakota will be just fine, but will they be that dominant team that we're used to seeing and a team that's just, especially in their conference, which is so tough? I'm not sure, but they're still, for me, a top 10 program, you know, bordering on a top 5 program even this year.
Last one for you, Chris, and we always appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us on the program. The Denver Pioneers were last year's NCAA hockey champions. They've started the season with 2 wins and a tie in 3 games. In your opinion, are they still the team to beat in U.S. college hockey this season?
No, no doubt in my mind. I think that Henrik Borgstrom is possibly one of the best players in college hockey, if not the best right now. That's not to say that I think he's the best prospect in college hockey. I just think that as he is right now, he's one of the most dominant players. Troy Terry, an exceptional talent. You know, having Tanner to left back to be their goaltender is huge. And I think Jim Montgomery might be one of the best coaches outside of the NHL right now. I'm constantly amazed at it, you know, the times that he kind of sounds like he's in the mix. And I think that there's going to be an NHL team in the very near future that makes a good decision and brings him in. One of the things that I like most about him is he creates a culture around his team, and he creates this togetherness that seems to last these players a lifetime, really, even going back to his USHL days with the Duke. So as far as I'm concerned, Denver is still far and away to number one. They had 66 shots on goal last night and ended up with a 3-3 tie. So hats off to the Lake Superior State goalie who was able to keep them at bay there and keep the team in the mix. But I think that they are on paper, and just from what we've seen so far, the best team in college hockey.
Chris Peters is with ESPN.com. He's their prospects and U.S. college hockey writer. Chris, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chris. We'll do it again soon. It's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. We're going to put a bow on this Saturday's episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to all of the guests who joined us on this program on this Saturday. Chris Peters of ESPN.com. We also were joined by Jim Cerny of Sporting News, Matt Lachlan, the New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster. And in the first hour, some 2.5 hours ago thereabouts, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program, you can subscribe to it via iTunes or via your Apple or Android device. Get it sent to you each and every week. It's always also available on our website, illegalcurve.com and TSN1290.ca.
What about Illegal Gurve?
Yeah, Illegal Gurve is, I think, going to be our new website.
You better register that one quickly before someone else tries to steal it.
Exactly.
What is a gerv?
I'm not quite sure what a gerv is. A gerv is what happens when I start choking on and saying the word curve. That's what a gerv is.
That's why you got to make sure that you finish chewing those Timbits before we go back on air.
I had one Timbit in the course of the entire show, but I did have 2 oranges.
I noticed that in the middle of that interview with Chris Peters, all of a sudden I got this like
waft of
zest.
Yeah.
They're really good. They're really
going
good
through
oranges.
The studio. The citric zest.
They were nice clementines. Yeah, well, I tell you, they're good. They're good quality clementine. I would have shared, but I wanted them both for myself.
I like mandarin.
Yeah, well, I mean, mandarins, clementines, it doesn't really matter to me. Whatever's available in the grocery store, I'm going to put my hands on.
What about apples? Do you like a good Macintosh?
Aaron loves apples. So I'm not typically a huge apple guy, but Aaron loves apples. So now we keep a lot of apples in the house when I inevitably, you know, with kids, they end up eating maybe half the apple. So I end up eating about a half an apple or something like that.
I feel like you're a Royal Gala guy.
Pink Lady.
Pink Lady, not Pink Spartan. Lady.
No, not Smith. I don't like a Spartan. Don't like a McIntosh. Dave is shaking his head.
This is some grade A kibitzing, boys.
What about a green apple?
I do like a green apple. I like a good quality Granny Smith every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've now exhausted your knowledge of apple.
That's it. Honeycrisp? I think Honeycrisp is a type of apple.
I thought you were going to say, this would be a perfect time to jump into Mason Appleton getting his first ever career
Excellent
AHL play.
Segue there,
Thank
David.
You. Thank
the
you.
Moose with, did they win?
No, they lost.
They lost
3-2.
Sammy Niku continued his hot start,
yeah,
and same
assist.
With Jack Roslovic.
Roslovic scored. I think Julian Melchiori scored. It's one of those interesting quirks of the schedule in that the Monsters played the Moose last week while the Jets were playing the Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
And then this week, you have the Iowa Wild versus the Manitoba Moose, and also obviously the Winnipeg Jets versus the Minnesota Wild. So kind of interesting how that quirky worked out to the schedule. The Moose are on they've got an interesting three-game road trip. They go to they play a rematch tonight in Iowa, and then they don't play again until Wednesday, which is one of those
morning games. Yeah, it's like 11 a.m. Yeah.
It's like all students, and it's great because for the first two periods, all you hear is, if you're listening on the radio, all you hear is kids screaming, and then by the third period it gets quiet because they all have to go back to school. So it's very interesting, that the AHL does this down in the States. Apparently, they're quite well attended from the people who go from the Moose, who have told me that they get decent crowds out to them. So it's a lot of fun. It's a little interesting, though, just because they have the two games here, then they don't again play till Wednesday.
Yeah.
So a bit of a break to kind of get things tooled up while you're...
And the Moose and the Wild, of course, they'll be on TSN 1290 tonight. I believe pregame coverage starts at 6:45 with puck drop shortly after 7 p.m. And Blue Bomber Game Day, that's going to be coming up, I believe, at 1 o'clock this afternoon. You can join Darren Bombing, Chris Walby, and Troy Westwood as the Blue Bombers and the Argonauts are going to do battle in Toronto. Big game for the Bombers with the Stampeders losing last night. Still a long shot for the Bombers to finish first overall, but a Bombers victory today in Toronto or an Eskimos loss tonight in BC means the Bombers will clinch a home playoff game to be played at IG Field for the first time.
What about Daron Carter's pick six last night?
Pick six, for not bad for a wide receiver playing defensive back. Quickly, Dave?
Matt Hendricks and Dmitry Kulikov, according to Ken Wiebe, have shed the non-contact jerseys for today's practice, which is getting underway right now.
So there you have it. Hendricks and Kulikov likely getting close to being back in the lineup, may in fact return to the lineup on Thursday night for the Jets.
All I know, Drew, is I'm not drinking the Kulikov.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory doing a great job behind the board and a great photographer as he's snapping a picture of us right now. For Dave Manuk and Old Pickle Chips Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Find yourself together and the team will be all right.